it must be terrible to be George W. Bush on some level. You know, he's behaving like a C student and trying maybe the best he can. I don't know.
We saw families that had been displaced from their homes by bombing. And she said, "Daddy, when the war starts here, will this happen to our home?"
I would hope to continue writing novels for the rest of my life. I'm fairly domestic, and when I see my children's world being assaulted for no good reason, I find it hard not to say something about it.
This is Pacifica's Peace Watch for Wednesday, December 4th, 2002. I'm Verna Avery Brown. Iraq says its forthcoming report detailing its weapons programs will not include any admission that it has weapons of mass destruction. General Mohammed Amin, the Iraqi official working with UN arms inspectors in Iraq, said today in Baghdad the report demanded by the UN by Sunday will be huge with new elements. But he said the report will not include so-called prohibited activities, an apparent reference to weapons of mass destruction. The developments came as UN monitors in Iraq continued to search for weapons. A UN spokesman said the number of inspectors and inspection sites will increase in the days ahead. One UN team headed northwest of the capital, Baghdad, to make sure work at a demolished Center for Chemical Weapons had not resumed, while another team traveled south of the capital to a facility associated with Iraq's nuclear program. Speaking to reporters earlier today on the topic of the weapons inspectors in Iraq, President Bush seemed to downplay the importance of what the inspectors might find.
One of the things that I want to continue to remind Americans, this is not a game that we're playing of hide and seek. This is our attempt to work with the world community to create peace. And the best way for peace is for Mr. Saddam Hussein to disarm. It's up to him to make his decision. I am concerned that terrorists have disrupted the ability for peace-loving people to move a process forward. I'm concerned about that. And our country will continue to fight terror and join our allies in fighting terror wherever it exists. And so I fully understand the Israeli government's attempt to stamp out terror, because we'll never have peace so long as terrorists are able to disrupt. I'm also concerned about the plight of the Palestinian people. I'm concerned about suffering that has taken place as a result of the activities of terrorists. But the net effect of terrorism is to not only stop the peace process, but is to cause suffering amongst all the people of the region. And that's why our war against terror must remain steadfast and strong wherever terror exists. I am concerned about Al-Qaeda anywhere. I believe that Al-Qaeda was involved in the African bombings in Kenya. I believe Al-Qaeda hates freedom. I believe Al-Qaeda will strike anywhere they can in order to disrupt a civil society. And that's why we're on the hunt. And we're making progress. Slowly but surely, we're dismantling the Al-Qaeda network. And it doesn't matter how long it takes to find them, we'll find them. And we're going to bring them to justice. And the good news is that the free world recognizes the threats that we all face. And therefore, we're more bound together than we've ever been in cutting off money and sharing intelligence and bringing people to justice. It's a dangerous world we live in, because there's still terrorists on the loose. And this is the great charge we have. This is the first war of the 21st century. And it's a different kind of war. It's a different kind of war than our fathers and grandfathers fought. It requires the same amount of courage and the same amount of focus, and this government will continue to provide that focus. I'm running this war on against terror based upon freedom. Unlike the killers, we value each life in America. Everybody's precious. Everybody counts. And and to the extent that we need to continue to make that message work, we will try to do so. But the best thing we can do is to show results. Not only do we liberate Afghanistan from the Taliban, we remain in place. And the suffering of the human condition is improving. And suffering is less because of the United States of America.
Some peace-loving Americans believe that when the president talks about caring for the Iraqi children and bombing Iraq in the same sentence, it's a bit of an oxymoron. In an interview earlier this week, linguist Mark Crispin Miller asserted that when Bush speaks or misspeaks, it is not accurate to call him a moron, but a sociopath, that Bush's misspeaks are not reflections of his lack of intelligence, but of his sociopathic tendencies. He makes the argument that Bush misspeaks when he attempts to express compassion or sympathy for others. Miller affirms that is the definition of a sociopath. I don't know that people, even people that want to make fun of the president, may necessarily accept that we can make the leap that he's a sociopath, but it does make a compelling case.
Well, I certainly think it does. And I must say, I've heard from a lot of people who feel that the analysis I've given adds up better than the claim that he's a genial moron, that he's a puppet, that he's just a doofus. That's a role that is constructed for him. If you really listen to his public performances, you listen to his off-the-cuff remarks, pay attention to his words, you'll see he has a hard time expressing empathy or sympathy or kindness.
Give me an example of one of his jokes that you say are cruel.
Well, aside from his joke about Carla Faye Tucker, he joked with David Letterman about his open heart surgery. He made a joke about the fact that all the Jews are going to be damned to hellfire eternally. Thought that was a riot. He made a joke about the Russians slaughtering women and children in Chechnya. You know, I suppose most appallingly, he's made a couple of public jokes about 9/11. They're in my book. He said he was speaking about it in Florida, and he said, well, the first thing I thought was, boy, there's some lousy pilot. And there was a pause, and this very partisan audience was silent because that's not funny. And then he said, I mean, it must have been a terrible accident. I'm sorry, but, you know, it seems to me that sociopathic is a very apt term for someone who would make a joke like that.
Mark Crispin Miller is author of The Bush Dyslexicon. A group of Americans made up of nuns, priests, Nobel Peace Prize laureates, doctors, and ministers have been slapped with another $20,000 fine by the U.S. Treasury Department for breaking the sanctions against Iraq by traveling to the country and carrying medicine. Members of the group say they're hoping the government will try to prosecute them for taking medicine and toys to sick children. Cliff Kendi is an organic market gardener from Indiana. He spoke with us this afternoon from Baghdad, where the holy season of Ramadan is coming to an end.
The fast of Ramadan has just ended. The moon was sighted this evening. So we've just ended a month of prayer and fasting. What a dramatic way to face into a war. Maybe it's the kind of thing that needs to happen in the United States. What if we had to spend a month a total nation in prayer and fasting before we can start a war?
Is war or the impending war pretty much on the minds of most Iraqis? Is there any way of telling what people are thinking? How are they reacting? What are in the news reports?
I was asking one of the fellows we've gotten to know better in recent years, or recent months. He's a driver, and I was asking him about his children. I said, you know, what do your children think about this? Have you told them about that? What are their thoughts about it? He said, well, you know, Cliff, I was just talking with my 10-year-old daughter. We were watching a news show. It was about Afghanistan and some of the bombing that was going on in Afghanistan. And we saw families that had been displaced from their homes by bombing. And she said, Daddy, when the war starts here, will this happen to our home? So even little children are aware, it seems, about the possibilities of war and some of the implications of that.
Would it be fair to say, Cliff, that it's little children like that are the reason you're there in Baghdad?
Well, I think they're the ones that maybe tear at our heartstrings the most, in the easiest ways. But, you know, getting to know people my own age, and I'm 53, or people who are students in the university, or older people who are beyond my age, you know, I realize that they're human beings just like me. They They have families just like I have. They get up in the morning. They take their faith seriously just like I do. They have dreams of the future just like I do. And I realize that deciding who wins a conflict by who can stack the bodies the highest beside the road doesn't make sense in our world anymore.
You are there in defiance of the U.S.-imposed sanctions against Iraq. What will happen if the organization, and I understand the organization does intend to refuse to pay the fines, what will happen as a result of that to you and the others?
I don't know. I'm here because Jesus says we're supposed to love our enemies. The church has been involved in works of mercy. I think to be here, to try to see enemies as brothers and sisters, to try to bring supplies in that help them live a fuller life, is what we're supposed to do as human beings for each other. When states say you can't be nice to each other, what does that mean?
Well, and the government has said that there's concern that the reason they slapped these sanctions on in the first place is because there's no way of telling whether the medical supplies and the other articles that you and the Voices of the Wilderness team are bringing in, whether they will end up supporting Saddam Hussein's government.
Well, I suspect that those who are in power in this country don't have a shortage of medicine. They can get those medicines whenever they need them. We've been in the hospitals, and it's normal civilians who don't have anything to do with the government who are unable to get the supplies because of the sanctions imposed by the United States and the UN. How do you be a brother and sister to people who have been called enemy? How do you break those barriers down so that we can be human to each other?
Cliff Kendi of Voices in the Wilderness. The group has said it will not pay the $20,000 fine to the U.S. Justice Department, or Treasury Department, rather, but instead will collect that amount and use it to purchase medicine or to repair water treatment facilities damaged from U.S. bombings. They're urging other Americans to write letters to the editors and to their congressional representatives telling them the people of Iraq are not our enemy. Iraqi Americans living in Southern California spoke with Pacifica's Peace Watch about their current situation here in the United States, their views on a possible war in Iraq, and their hopes and fears for Iraq's future.
Iraqi Americans face two attacks on their homeland. One, a possible war about to be waged on Iraq, and an attack here on their civil liberties. Several people I spoke to had been to Iraq recently to visit family, for they feared it may be their last time to see them. They wished to remain anonymous for fear of retribution from the U.S. government for traveling to Iraq.
My name is Salam Al-Mariati. I'm the executive director of the Muslim Public Affairs Council, the public service agency aimed at disseminating accurate information about Islam and Muslims to the American public. I was born in Baghdad, Iraq in 1960. I think that the political debate in America has been lacking. It lacks the historical context to develop a deeper understanding of really what has led us to this conflict. It seems like there's been a Gulf crisis for quite some time, and there are conditions that lead to that crisis. Unless we deal with those conditions, then the crises will continue. We'll go and bomb there. We'll invade. We'll send our troops there. We'll retreat at some point. But the crisis itself is not going to be resolved. I don't think there's much discussion of what's happened in the past, the history of the Western world's intervention in the Gulf after World War I. From the outset of the Sykes-Picot Agreement that basically carved up the Middle East. arbitrary manner based on French and British interests at that time, that the United States basically also inherited after the end of World War II and has dealt with since then.
My name is Hamid Saeed. I'm a professor at UCI School of Medicine. War is ugly. War is a failure of civilized human being to communicate. Civilians will be decimated again. Our soldiers here will be lost. Even if we lose one soldier, that's one human being. Belong to a mother, belong to a wife, belong to a sister. Why subjecting a human being to suffering if there is a way to try to solve things? And you know, we changed the Soviet Union without shooting, without a war. So we have done miracles solving things by means of being patient, by being the grown-ups, by being the people with the vision. And I just don't see why the same concept not used in the situation.
To me, in my mind, George Bush the father versus George Bush the son, they are the same people. They have committed the same crimes, not just against Iraq. They have committed the same crimes against poor people around the world. They've continued this, like, the beating of the drum of war constantly after oil, you know, with their corporations and everything. It's just like, it's the same policy. It's the same name. It's the same face when I see the president now. And he even has the same cabinet. He has the same administration. I have the same faces. It's ridiculous. And so I don't see them as any different. And number two, I definitely see them as war criminals, both of them. I think that Saddam Hussein is a war criminal as well. I don't think that he has served the interests of the Iraqi people in any way, shape, or form. He's a dictator who was never elected. He has ruled the country of Iraq with force and with violence and with terror. I think the Iraqi people have been terrorized more. I mean, you know, people say that Iraqis are terrorists or that Iraq is a country that sponsors terror and all these things. I think it's true. I think, well, I don't think that's true, but I think that the Iraqi people are probably the best people to speak on that because they have been terrorized more than anybody else on this planet, it seems. They have been terrorized by Saddam Hussein. They have been terrorized by the George Bush administration before, the Clinton administration, and now George Bush again. They've been terrorized by 12 years of sanctions. I mean, yes, they know about terror, probably more than anybody in the world. They're not terrorists. They're the victims of terror more than anything.
The current sanctions in Iraq are said to be implemented to weaken Saddam Hussein's regime. Many Iraqi Americans I spoke to are outraged when seeing for themselves whom the sanctions are really affecting.
Bananas are like a luxury right now in Iraq because they cost like 4 cents as opposed to 1 cent for grapes or something like that. You know, people are so poor right now that buying a banana for a family is like a big deal. You know, and just the thought of that is so ridiculous. And the only reason why is because of the sanctions. I mean, think about it. Like, economic sanctions only hurt people. They don't hurt Saddam Hussein. I mean, that's just stupid to think that putting economic sanctions on a country ruled by a dictator is going to hurt the dictator. I mean, all he does is sit around, make money, you know, enforce insane laws, kill people. And in return, our government goes over there and decides, okay, so what we're going to do is punish the people? Like, that's so outrageous that I'm surprised that more people in the United States don't crack down on our government for committing such acts of international terrorism on other countries.
The sanctions really represent genocide because they punish the populace and they don't punish the ruling or the dictator or his immediate regime. And the United Nations had published, and many other agencies have, Doctors in the Wilderness and many other organizations have documented the loss of hundreds of thousands of children, elderly people, women, from the destruction of the water facilities, from destruction of electricity, for lack of medicine. All of these have been done, and so it's a blind collective punishment of people because of the act of ruthless few.
my family over there, they think they're going to get bombed. And they stocked on food. I mean, I saw them. I saw the sacks of rice and wheat and stuff. And even they have their suitcases ready next to the door. I laughed at them and said, well, you know, they said, yeah, we've been into, you know, many. This time we're not going to be unready. So this time we're ready. I saw like at least 15 families. All of them are ready. And some of them, of course, they have like one room ready. One room inside the house. They boarded the windows with plywood. And I said, well, what if they use poison gas, you know? The plywood is not going to help. They said, well, this is, well, we taped it. We taped the windows. It's so sad. It's really sad. Yeah. So they taped the windows and some people, they say, well, if God wants us to die, we'll die. They just take like very fatalistic approach. So if it's written, you know, if we meant to be, that's it. You know, we're not going to go away. This is our home. And if we die, we die.
What I hear from my family members, the situation is they're very scared. They are resigned to, uncertain future. They are caught between a rock and a hard place, between a ruthless ruler who will kill anybody who opposes him, and a military an army that determined to go to war. They are very much looking forward to some kind of outing from that situation.
My immediate family is in here with me. I have a son, a daughter, and a wife. Actually, we contact them frequently by phone. They are always concerned. And some of them, they say, please do what you can to stop the war on us. And all the time they carry the same message. The last I talked to them, they are very afraid what's going to happen, because they think the war is happening anyway, no matter what the United Nations would say, and they are packed up and ready to go somewhere outside the city, because they think it's safer to go outside the city than staying at home.
I think we have to leave the issue of regime change up to the Iraqi people. If the people of Romania and the people of the Philippines and the people of Czechoslovakia and the people throughout Eastern Europe were able to establish the process for regime change, then the Iraqi people should be allowed to do the same thing. It really is up to them to determine who's going to be representing them in the future. It should not be up to any foreign government or foreign economic interest to determine who's going to set up as the governing power in Baghdad.
The United States and the Bush administration has had a policy of attacking Iraq from September 11, or even before that. I don't think that this is something that is going to be in any way avoided through diplomatic pressure or the United Nations coming in and trying to convince the United States not to. I mean, you have the president himself standing up in front of the United Nations, in front of the entire world, saying, I don't care. You're either with me or you're not, but we're going in. And this whole measure of this resolution for international inspections and monitors and everything, I think is just a pretext for war. It's just another reason for them to go in and to say, see what they did. They violated the resolution. Look what they're doing. We're going to bomb. All along, they've been building up forces. I mean, every single day you see battleships coming from Long Beach and from whatever, California and San Diego, going over to the Persian Gulf. There are 250,000 United States troops in and around Iraq right now. And if they're going to build up like that at the same time, say that we're going to try and explore all the diplomatic means that we can, it's a lie. It's a big lie. And they want the oil. They don't want anything to do. It has nothing to do with Saddam Hussein, because the United States is the one that propped him up and funded him and armed him for the last, whatever, 20 years or 30 years. And has nothing to do with him. Has nothing to do with the rights of the Iraqi people. Because nobody has been consulted. I mean, I have my family back in Iraq saying, when we want to know what's going to happen with our future, we watch what your Congress says.
I think one of the major problems in U.S. policymaking today is that it is still a unilateralist mode of policymaking, in the facade of multilateralism. And therein is the problem in terms of how the UN is being used. In other words, what we told the UN, either accept our stand or you will become a non-factor. You will not be effective at all. And so that kind of coercion on the members of the UN only leads people to believe that unilateralism is still the mode of the modus operandi of the U.S. Government. And when you hear people like Elliot Abrams, who was in charge of the Iran-Contra affair, and actually was censored by the U.S. Congress back in the early 80s, and who is now the architect of these kind of policies towards Iraq, and John Bolton, who is definitely a right-wing extremist in our government, and Paul Wolfowitz, who lectures us now about religion. And when you have a Pentagon official lecturing us about religion, then I think we have a problem here. These are the main proponents of the war industry in the Gulf. And these are the main proponents of unilateralism. And I think this is leaving a very bad image for America and a very bad image for us as Americans, because these policies are being done in our name as American citizens. And the more harm that's going to take place against the civilians of that region, then the more hate and resentment will be built up against us as Americans.
Being an Iraqi American in a political context is a very, very difficult thing. I mean, I think that since the first Gulf War, I was 15 years old, and that was kind of when I really started to understand who I was and who I was as an Iraqi and who I was as an American. And I think since that time, I've really probably been drawn more towards my Iraqi side in me, because you really are targeted and you really are isolated as, you know, oh my God, you're Iraqi. You know, and that could mean so many things, because now our country has been named as the Axis, part of the Axis of Evil, you know, automatically assumed to be a country full of, you know, terrorists who use chemical weapons against their own people and all of these things. And this is not the people. These are the actions of a government that the people never elected. And so it's funny, because I was born here in the United States. I've lived here in the United States all my life. I was educated here in Pasadena. I mean, it couldn't be more suburbia than that. And automatically all of these ideas of terrorism and chemical weapons and all of this, you know, like brutal behavior is associated with me just because of where my family is from, which is totally, you know, wrong and ignorant.
I would like a democratic government represented by the people that live in peace with its neighbors, and that the law is, that the rule of law will be the prevailing rules over there. We want specifically the administration to start committing itself to a democratic, freely elected regime in Iraq, instead of we hear that there is going to be so-and-so or so-and-so ruler. In other words, replacing one dictator with another. Those people have suffered tremendously for the last 20, 30 years. It's a time for them to live with dignity like anybody else.
Definitely, the Iraqis here, they feel sandwiched, because you see on TV that all the focus, everything on Iraq. And Iraq this and Iraq that and all that. And if you speak against the Iraqi government, you are afraid for your family over there, and you're scared to death because you are living here free and nice and all that, and you bring, you know, more misery to them. And here, if you speak against and if you protest against the American administrations, you are afraid of being labeled as a domestic terrorist or a sleeper. Because it's so sad when we go to demonstrations, like 20,000, you know, sometimes 10,000, and we're the only one, Iraqis, go protest. It's so embarrassing. I say, my God, look at the people. I don't even know them. And they are protesting for my country. And the Iraqis are hiding somewhere. And they don't. So hopefully this interview will give them some power and some encouragement to speak out, to participate, to leave messages, to fax some objections. And, you know, I mean, that would be really great if it helped them do that.
For Pacifica's Peace Watch, this is Jennifer Basisto.
You're listening to Pacifica's Peace Watch. I'm Verna Avery Brown. We'll be back in a moment.